all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Easy for you to say. Good morning, and hi. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Wednesday, March 8th, another beautiful day up here on Lake Wissota. You can tell at by the brightness of the full moon out there. Coming up this morning, what size is our surplus? Because, you know, a billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon you're talking about real money. Well, actually, any surplus in a state budget is a healthy thing. Putting it to work, however, becomes more difficult when Republicans try to make the math more complicated than it really is. So we'll review an explanation of what's available and how it could make a difference in the lives of Wisconsinites. Also, the Supreme Court race is beginning to attract the fringe, shall we say. The April 4th state Supreme Court election is going to directly impact whether women's health care rights are restored or further limited. So it's no wonder that the campaign is attracting far-right extremists, some of them with ties to the QAnon cult, the insurrection, and disinformation strategies. And we will talk to Mike Brown from A Better Wisconsin Together, a group that has been tracking this activity as part of the race. We will check in our next hour and get a full update for what could be a very snowy couple of days here for parts of Wisconsin with weatherology meteorologist Michael Cairo. We'll be joined later this hour by Melissa Kay from locally grown radio, WFHR. And then Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show, which is heard right after this one on many of these Civic Media radio stations, will tell us what to expect from his show. And I believe he's got another rather significant guest, given that he is a former Republican state capitol staffer who now, if you're not familiar with Todd's show, spends a lot of time talking about the good old days. As do I, when, you know, Republicans and Democrats could talk to one another because the Republican Party hadn't been completely taken over by, insert clown horn noises here. If you'd like to reach the show and give us your two cents on any of these topics and more, where's our phone number? Oh, that's Melissa Stanton wanting to say good morning. Well, thanks, Melissa. Appreciate that. I was just looking at our Facebook comments. And yeah, if you leave us some comments, we can maybe put them up on screen for the live feed over on our Facebook pages. You can see this show on Facebook at the Up North News Facebook page, the Civic Media Facebook page, or the Bull Falls Radio in Wausau Facebook page. Or you can call us 844-967-2789-715-388-7155. And you can also send us a nasty gram or a love letter, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. All the work that we do at Up North News is featured at upnorthnewswi.com, or look for Up North News WI on social media. And here's where we bring in one, Mr. Aaron Zommers. Good morning. That's not for you.
I know. But I didn't have it ready for the immediate go. It was at least
I didn't
like
know
second.
I was going to say it. The whole premise of this show is open mouth words fall out.
Well, yes.
And by and large, they are a string of pearls. Yeah, right. We always hope that sometimes what falls out does not lead to a pink slip. But I've made it this far, so I'm going to be very happy about that. Let's see. Apparently, this Facebook comment thing is catching on. Look at this. We got Randall in Tennessee, wishing us good morning from there. We're getting callers from California from time to time. Aaron, I think this very long project we're doing is on the cusp of becoming an overnight sensation.
Sure seems that way. Getting people all over the country.
That's what you always hope for. And you know, if you study music history and rock and roll history, it is one of it's one of the funnier terms out there, overnight success. Because these are usually bands that have been busting their hump for years, you know, and then finally they make it big. In fact, we're going to talk about the Beatles later this hour in music history. You know, they'd been playing for years in all these small clubs, and then suddenly one radio station in Chicago plays one song and they're off to the races. So we should be so lucky that we get to become one of those overnight sensations here. I guess we'll just have to keep working at it.
Yeah, it's impossible to predict, though.
I know. Speaking of comments up on Facebook, we are still taking your nominees for Best Picture. And it doesn't have to be in the theater. Yeah, I know that we see plenty of movies. In fact, where did my list go? Here we go. We see plenty of movies on streaming services and on cable and things like that. And we'd like to know what was the best movie of 2022? You know, was it Top Gun for you? Was it Everything Everywhere All at Once, or The Fablemans, or Women Talking, or, you know, The Woman King, or The Batman, or Nope? You gave me a couple that you still are hoping to see. Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. And The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Was that Nicolas Cage?
Yep, Nicolas Cage as Nick Cage.
Nick Cage, yes. And somehow I don't know that Elvis or Glass Onion will be winning any Oscars, but those were the only two movies of 2022 that I can think of that I saw that I might put up on that list. But we would be happy to have your comments on that as well as we get set for Oscar night, which is what? Just 4 nights away with Jimmy Kimmel. Maybe, you know, it's one of those where the viewership has been steadily declining, and I don't know that it's going to come up this year. It's not just a reflection on the show, but again, people are watching their movies at home, and they're not seeing these things that are nominated.
Right, and I think we're a good example of that. I've seen, what, maybe 2 or 3 more of these than you have, and I haven't seen Elvis, and you've seen that one.
Right. Yep. So we're not as communal in that we all go see the exact same things. Even the blockbusters don't bust as many blocks as they used to. All right, let's pause for a second. When we come back, we will look at a report that tries to explain the state budget surplus. It's important that we have one, and it's also important that we don't let certain politicians try to talk it down. It's big, it's real, and it can be put to good work in Wisconsin. Details next. You're up north. So how big is that budget surplus? Is it 25 or 6 to 4? I'm as confused as a rock and roll band in the late 60s, not sure which side is up. We'll talk about the state budget surplus in just a sec here. First, a quick sports note. Brooke Lopez scored 26 points. Chris Middleton and Javon Carter each added 24 as the Milwaukee Bucks beat the Orlando Magic last night, 134 to 123. That's their 18th win in the past 19 games. Bobby Portis Jr. had 16 points, 11 boards. Jay Crowder had 15 points for the Bucks. And they now have a 14-game winning streak against Orlando. No, you did not hear Giannis's name, nor Drew Holiday. Both did not play last night. Giannis has a non-COVID illness. Holiday has a sore neck. But still, the Bucks had little trouble finding the right combinations and stretching their league-best record to 47-18. And the Bucks are at home tomorrow against Brooklyn. And as we mentioned, with March Madness coming up in men's college basketball, the Marquette Golden Eagles will be playing tomorrow in New York in the Big East tournament, and the Badgers will be playing this evening in the Big Ten tournament in Chicago. They will be playing Ohio State at about 5:30. So we'll continue to follow that in the madness of the month of March, which I think allegedly is like copyrighted and we're not supposed to say it, or maybe advertisers just can't use it. We're going to anyway till they tell us to stop. So again, in case the lawyers are listening, March Madness, March Madness, March Madness. All right. Let's talk about the state budget and what's in there and what's not and what it does. Because again, as soon as you hear budget, you hear people, you know, they're done. They want to check out. It's something that every journalist who's ever covered a state capitol or a city hall is aware of, that politics either turns people off or it's boring. And this program and Up North News and Civic Media are all dedicated to reminding people that, yes, some of that is true, but it's worth sifting through to find the nuggets that are important to you so that you don't end up saying, wait, what? My school board just banned all the books in the library? How did that happen? Or your taxes change, or whatever the case may be. And if we're doing our job right, we find these little bits, these little nuggets, and highlight those rather than just the day-to-day, you know, Senate debate of Senator Foghorn Leghorn said to so-and-so. We've got to try to get beyond that. But in this particular case, we are going to throw numbers at you, because in this segment, we want to make clear there is a state budget surplus. There are Republicans in the legislature who are trying to wish it away, which is weird because, again, it's around $7 billion. It's never been that big. And it's not the result of, as some politicians would say, well, it means we're overtaxed. No, it means we're $7 billion above projections. The projections were low because the projections were made while we were in a pandemic. But through a whole bunch of good choices that were made, primarily by Governor Evers at the state level and Democrats who controlled Congress at the federal level, the way the economy was shepherded through kept people in business, kept people in their jobs. That generated the same taxes that it normally would, and that resulted in a surplus. Had Tim Michaels won the governor's race this past November, I don't doubt for a minute we'd be hearing that it's a $7 billion surplus from Republicans. And by the way, we're going to give away exactly $7 billion in tax cuts that are primarily generated toward the highest income taxpayers. That is, this is not my first rodeo between covering the state legislature for many years, being in it, being an observer, being an activist. That's what would have happened. It's that kind of thing that does turn some people off, that when it works in your favor, there's $7 billion in the kitty. And when it doesn't work in your favor, when you can't blow it all on tax cuts for corporations, you want to try to talk it down. And that's what's happening with the disagreement on the current size of the Wisconsin budget surplus. So we can't even get to the point of putting the money to work for Wisconsinites until we can agree on the facts. We can agree on the terms of what do we have to work with here. Remember, and I'm going to go ahead and give you a spoiler alert here. Later on in our daily history lesson, when we look back at Up North News stories from 1, 2, and 3 years ago, it was a year ago that the Republicans leading the legislature held their last session of the year. Again, it's March 8th. March 8th of 2022, 1 year ago, March 8th was the last session day of the year when they knew at that point there was a surplus. Not $7 billion, it was something like $2 billion estimated at that time. Still, something you could have done something with. But Republicans took a paid vacation for the rest of the year and let that surplus sit instead of putting it to work for small businesses, for farmers, for parents, roads, natural resources, schools, you name it. They let it sit there, hoping instead that in the true notion of a heist, they could give it away as tax cuts if Tim Michaels had won the governor's race, or if Rebecca Clefish had won the primary and won the governor's race, which is what a lot of us, frankly, were thinking, you know, was a very real possibility. But it didn't work out that way. So here we sit with the legislature back in session, though it's hard to tell because the assembly didn't meet at all in the month of February. And by the way, side note, the assembly not meeting at all in February means that once again, for I believe it's the fifth year in a row, the legislature did not pass any sort of resolution honoring Black History Month. That's an entire story in itself, but really that's all that you need to know. All right, so we have a $7 billion surplus, right? Sure. That's what we get from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. The Legislative Fiscal Bureau, that's the really smart people who don't have a partisan axe. They are amazing staffers at the state capitol. Every legislator in the country should wish they had a staff as good as the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. They don't BS anything. So when they say it's $7 billion, you can take it to the bank that it's $7 billion, but then you can slice up the numbers different ways, and that determines how much of that you can put to use. So the Legislative Fiscal Bureau projects that revenue from taxes and other sources will surpass spending by about $5.5 billion. What's the rest of it? Well, some one-time federal pandemic relief funds are in there. Oh, one-time funds, you hear. So we shouldn't put that to work because, you know, that's money that's only there for a year. To which I would respond, yeah, it's here for a year. What can you do with it? Don't put it against your regular monthly bills. you know, this bonus that you're getting is where you would, you know, make it. If you got it at home, you wouldn't just put it against the light bill. You'd say, okay, I can finally fix that hole in the roof or whatever the case may be. And so that's what Governor Evers and others are proposing. So you do have the one-time funding that you don't want to use for ongoing expenditures. And that's according to Dave Lopnow, assistant director of the Fiscal Bureau. Evers and Republicans will probably try to direct the surplus to their own priorities through one-time investments, kind of grant programs. And that quote and a lot of these story details are coming from Harm Van Huzen, who is with the Associated Press Report for America State House News Initiative. Report for America is a nonprofit national service program that places journalists in local newsrooms to report on undercovered issues. And sadly, state legislatures have become an underreported issue in America's newsrooms. So we are very thankful for programs like Report for America that allow stories like this to be written about the legislature. So Governor Evers laid out plans, according to Harm's reporting here, for several large one-time investments. They include $240 million to launch a paid family and medical leave program. That would attract and keep younger workers here in this state. This state is bleeding young workers. People raised here who look around at the environment, the political environment, the environment for workers and natural resources and the education of their kids, and they head for the hills. And we have got to work on ways to make this place a more family-friendly, worker-friendly state after more than a decade of Republican budget austerity. So Governor Evers is proposing a family leave program, which would go which would be a big step toward helping in that endeavor. There would be billions in additional public school funding. There would be $100 million to fight pollution from PFAS, you know, those forever chemicals that we're finding more and more of in our water. So the legislature and Evers will look at their various priorities. They will look at some of the one-time federal funds. They will look at programs that they want to give a boost to, like Medicaid, which is health insurance for lower-income folks around Wisconsin, higher wages for things like correctional officers who've gone a very long time without a significant pay increase, and it's getting tougher and tougher to find people to hire to guard our prisons. So once you account for all of the continuing costs in the budget, the state is still left with about $2.5 billion from recurring revenue after this two-year budget expires. So again, you're about $2.5 billion to the good. Now, this didn't stop Assembly Speaker Robin Voss from accusing Governor Evers last week of quote-unquote phony math. And Voss said, "We do not have anywhere near the money that Governor Evers spoke about yesterday," in part because he's referring to some of the one-time money. But it's one-time money that Governor Evers is putting to work in the state, so there's nothing phony about the math. And by the way, Republicans' math doesn't add up completely itself. You'll recall that they want to enact a flat income tax rate that would primarily benefit the very wealthy, and doing so would decrease revenue every year in the state by almost $5 billion. Say that again. If Republicans go with a flat tax, so everybody pays at the lowest tax bracket, how much less is Wisconsin going to take in? Almost $5 billion a year. So on the one hand, we have a surplus that can be put to work and make things better in Wisconsin. And then the other scenario, we're $5 billion short each year if we wanted to maintain things where they're at. So it is unlikely that, of course, either side is going to get everything that they want. But what we do need is for both of the parties to be more realistic about how much surplus revenue is expected. And right now, it's about $2.5 billion next year and $3 billion the year after that. That's money, again, that can be put to work for both things. It can go for tax cuts, primarily geared at the middle class, and it can go for spending on investments on things for the state, either ongoing or more likely one time, those one time improvements, those upgrades, those repairs, all of these things. But it can't be done if you're throwing around charges like phony math with numbers that don't add up, which is part of what Robin Voss has been doing. We need an honest debate in this legislature, because politics is contentious enough on its own. It's boring enough on its own, and it's made worse when people can't talk to one another with a common set of facts. And the sooner we can get the legislature to do that and get to work, well, the sooner they can get the budget done and take their next paid vacation. We'll be back. You're up north.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Well, let's see. It's International Women's Day, and I have to admit that I am still trying to get my head around the TV promos that I was seeing today about so much of the commemorations being held in Abu Dhabi. It seemed to me that I would be expecting more comments that, like me, kind of raise some eyebrows about, you know, the way that women, you know, girls' education has been banned, women being barred from public spaces, barred from working in you know, certain situations, as is the case in Afghanistan and Iraq and other parts of the world. And I'm sure that will be discussed today. It was just a bit of a head scratcher to me, but I'm going to follow the coverage. And, you know, rather than, I'm not going to try to wax poetic on International Women's Day. I'm not in a position to do that. And I'm not going to be one of those folks who will, you know, pretend to try. It is not my day. What I'd like to do is tomorrow share some of the best of what is talked about, and not just the platitudes and not just the, you know, the challenges, you know, but the real work that needs to get done, because obviously it starts right here in Wisconsin, where women are now second-class citizens, thanks to a law that a bunch of white guys wrote in 1849. So I'm going to worry less about, you know, Abu Dhabi and other countries, and more about what it is that we're doing for women right here in Wisconsin. And I'll add that to my list of things that we try to pass along tomorrow and tell you about the coverage of International Women's Day. I didn't mention in sports earlier because, well, I guess maybe because I didn't want to, because it's still just a rumor, but you know, Aaron Rodgers is reportedly talking with the New York Jets about a potential trade. And again, one of those things in our history lesson that I'm going to mention in the next segment too. This is the one-year anniversary of Aaron Rodgers signing a four-year contract extension and saying, I'm going to retire as a Packer, to which a lot of us said, oh, really? I mean, other people did say, good, this is done. All right, let's call it good. And Rodgers is going to be here for 4 years. He's going to retire. It's going to be great. Narrator, it was not great. It was quite the season, everything from COVID comments all the way to the darkness retreat to not helping out the new receivers early in camp, blaming everybody but himself during the course of the season. And, you know, here we sit once again without a Lombardi trophy or, frankly, anything significant with which to remember the 2022 NFL season. And so if Rodgers, the Packers, and the Jets, or some other team, but for the moment, we will wish the Packers and Aaron Rodgers well as they try to work this all out. I saw a little glitch on my screen just now. If we had a glitch in our connection up here through the Western Union lines to Lake Wissota, I offer up my apologies for that. Quick little update on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, because it will impact women's health. It will impact democracy. It will impact voters' rights in this state. Because again, we're talking about the difference between a court that's controlled by right-wing justices, as has been the case for 15 years, or for the first time in 15 years, does this court flip and is controlled by progressives? who can then look at cases that might actually protect people through the rule of law rather than see things through, you know, the tunnel vision of partisanship or, you know, ideology, as seems to have been the case on both the Wisconsin and the U.S. Supreme Courts. There are news reports that indicate that internal polling by the campaign of Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz shows that she is well ahead of conservative former Justice Dan Kelly, might even be a double-digit lead. And I cannot tell you how much I hesitate in passing that along to you, because it only undercuts the work that so many people are doing to make sure that everybody comes to vote on April 4th or cast an absentee ballot before then. And I know it's not going to be everybody. We're not going to get 100% voter turnout, but we certainly have to do better, because again, when more people vote, we tend to get choices that are more in line with what more people want. Unfortunately, the folks who have more of a, shall we say, a minority view on things are much better about showing up at every election day. And far too often, independent voters, shall we say, voters who don't cast votes in every election are more likely to look at one and say, there's nothing there that affects me. That's wrong this time. Or, you know, this race is already in the bag. Yeah, tell that to Hillary Clinton. Or tell that to Lisa Neubauer, who was running against Brian Hagedorn, what is that, 3 years ago now, when Hagedorn, a very dyed-in-the-wool conservative, seemed to be down handily. And yet he managed to squeak out a victory. So when I see stories like this one that say internal polling shows that Protasiewicz is up, when I see stories that indicate that the Dan Kelly campaign has bought little to no direct TV and radio yet, I do worry about that false sense of security, the complacency that can set in with voters who think that, well, all the work here is done. It wasn't done for Brian Hagedorn. It wasn't done the next year for Donald Trump. And it's not done yet for Dan Kelly, who has money to spend. So what that tells you is their research or their gut tells them that you need to spend as much as you can, as late as you can in the campaign, and really get to people with a message where it's too late for the Protasiewicz folks or anybody else to refute it, to call out anything in there that might be erroneous or slanderous or whatever the case may be. It's not going to be easy to watch TV for the final week or two before that election. But the outside groups are going to come in. We're going to talk to Mike Brown in our next hour all about that. But there will be a debate in 2 weeks between Protasiewicz and Kelly. And Kelly has, again, he's already beat back Jennifer Doro, who seemed to be a rising star in the conservative movement. And Dan Kelly was on the Supreme Court. He has been through a race before. Now, he lost in 2020 to Jill Karofsky, but he's not new at this. And so whatever the polling shows, whatever the spending reports show, there really is no alternative than for people to continue to pour it on in terms of spreading the word about the race, about the importance of voting, about how to get an absentee ballot, and then try to remind people who might not be inclined to vote about the things that can impact them, whether they are a woman or one of their allies, or whether they happen to believe in, you know, voting rights, if they'd like to see the return of the convenience of ballot drop boxes, if they'd like to see a less restrictive window on early voting in Wisconsin. These are all things that can affect them, as well as things that will come up in disputes between the Republican legislature and the Democrat in the governor's mansion right now. Plenty of disagreements have come up there as well. Tops among them, fair maps, which was an issue a year ago right now. as the state Supreme Court inserted itself into the redistricting process instead of letting a federal court handle it. And that's how we ended up with these maps that are rigged. They were rigged in the last decade. They're even more rigged in this decade. And so consequently, you have things like women's abortion rights that have 70% bipartisan support in this state that aren't getting done. That's the importance of a state Supreme Court race, is again, getting things that are representative of the people into law and done by a legislature that represents people and a Supreme Court that represents the law rather than an ideology. Now, along those lines, there are many people, Wisconsin and elsewhere, that favor the legalization of marijuana. And there was a vote in Oklahoma yesterday about that, basically through initiative and referendum, should Oklahoma legalize recreational marijuana? Medicinal marijuana is already legal in Oklahoma. But again, although it appears that a lot of folks in Oklahoma would like to see full legalization, that was actually voted down yesterday, in part because of a late blitz. Again, like I mentioned in this race, a late blitz of campaigning from faith leaders, law enforcement, and prosecutors. Oklahoma would have become the 22nd state to legalize adult use of cannabis, and they would join other conservative states like Montana and Missouri that have approved similar proposals in recent years. But many of the state's Republican leaders and legislators were against the proposal, as were plenty of law enforcement. They wanted to send a signal in their view that voters don't want to see recreational marijuana, that they think that there is more of a criminal aspect to it. Even though voters approved medical marijuana 5 years ago by a 14-point margin. And frankly, that medical marijuana standard in Oklahoma is one of the most liberal in the country. There are more than 2,800 licensed dispensaries, and roughly 10% of the state's adult population has a medical license to buy and consume cannabis. So in many ways, what the referendum was doing was acknowledging the reality of what's going on out there right now, that people are using it. They're saying, you know, oh, my arm, it's broken. And they're getting a license to be able to purchase and use it. But again, that late campaigning that came in from religious leaders and from conservative politicians had stepped up the activity enough to the point where the referendum went down. Now, one of the campaign directors of the, you know, who was behind the referendum, supported it, said that despite the results on Tuesday, full legalization is inevitable. She said that basically, as I noted, almost 400,000 Oklahomans already use marijuana legally, and in her view, many thousands more use it illegally. She said a two-tiered system where one group of Oklahomans is free to use this product and the other is treated like criminals does not make logical sense, she said in a statement. Now, in Wisconsin, again, we don't have initiative and referendum. We can't, put something on the ballot just through, you know, enough people signing petitions. Something like this has to come from the legislature. And so, again, it underscores, if you want a legislature putting things into law, putting things into the Constitution, putting things on the ballot that jive with where Wisconsinites' values really are, then you need a legislature that is elected fairly and not one where one party seized power, rigged the maps, and then held on to power election cycle after election cycle because they had a state Supreme Court that would back up the maps. Now, we can't change all of the legislature at the drop of a hat, especially given how, you know, how these lines are currently drawn. But if we elect just one justice, that flips control of the state Supreme Court, then in issues ranging from marijuana legalization to fair maps to women's health rights to a host of other things that have bipartisan support, we can make a real difference right now by going to the polls on April 4th or getting your absentee ballot ahead of time at myvote.wi.gov. Melissa Kay of Locally Grown Radio coming in next for a little music break and history lesson. You're up north. No, that's not me and Melissa. That's Beavis and Butthead, which debuted on MTV on this day in 1993. Melissa's here from Locally Grown Radio, WFHR. How are you?
Oh, pretty good, Pat. Aside my voice.
I was going to say, wait, that voice sounds, is that more like Beavis or Butthead? It definitely has that, it's got that quality to it. So I don't know. Maybe you didn't watch the cartoon very much back in the day. Oh, no. Did she freeze or did I freeze?
I think she froze.
Oh, no. See, she talked about having a sore throat. Maybe she got a virus from her computer. Ba-dum-bum. Okay. Maybe she'll be back with us in a second. So we'll just hold her right there. And Melissa, if you hear us and if you come back on, just start waving your arms or whatever. And in the meantime, we'll carry on with today's history lesson and music break. It was on this day in 1960. Oh, wait a minute. Let's try her again here at first. I hear her knocking on the door. There we go. Here you go. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Trying to get back on.
There you go. Well, we were saying your voice makes it sound like maybe you got a virus from your computer. And so you're here now. I was asking if you were, if you watched Beavis and Butthead back in the day.
Not really. I mean,
I think it's Beavis and Butthead's fault.
Obviously.
Con Julio.
I think there's a butthead somewhere in the internet stream between here and there. All right, Melissa, we'll hope to get you in between all the glitches here as we carry on and mention that on this day in 1963, Chicago radio station WLS's weekly music survey had at number 40 a brand new group on the U.S. charts, some kids from Liverpool named the Beatles with their song Please Please Me. So there on March 8th, 1963, WLS probably was the first radio station in America to play the Beatles. You could probably call that a milestone moment in music history.
I would think so.
I would think so. I mean, wouldn't you like that if it said instead WFHR was the first to play the Beatles, you know?
That'd be cool.
But they didn't know. You never know at the time, you know, that something's going to be big. I mean, we talked about Aaron Rodgers a couple of minutes ago. You know, when he first came out, it's like, oh, here's the kid that's going to replace Brett Favre. You know, and he turned out to be amazing himself. You just never know. And so that one little record coming in at the bottom of the chart, number 40, opened the door for the what would later happen with the Beatles in America. It was on this day 7 years ago that Beatles producer George Martin died at the age of 90. A genius. You just can't use the word genius without George Martin coming up in it. Paul McCartney said in a statement, "From the day he gave the Beatles our first recording contract to the last time I saw him, he was the most generous, intelligent, and musical person I've ever had the pleasure to know." And I don't think truer words could be spoken, because again, let's come back to the sports analogy. You can have great talent, but man, if you don't have a good coach to help you with it, you know, you're nothing.
Nope, you got to have good people.
Mm-hmm. How about the monkeys? Where do you stand on the monkeys?
Hey, we're the monkeys.
I thought love was only true in fairy tales.
We want to wish a happy 78th birthday to Mickey Dolenz, drummer and vocalist, and the only surviving member now of the Monkees. Mickey Dolenz, 78 years old. I had a colleague at Channel 13 in Eau Claire who was, when she was much younger, just a huge Davy Jones fan, and at one point got the chance to meet him and get an autograph, and I laughed at her, but she was swooning even as a woman in her 30s or 40s that she could finally meet one of her musical heroes from back in the day.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was very sweet. And she was very sad when he passed away. But again, Mickey Dolenz, 78 today. Randy Meisner is 77 today, founding member and bassist of the Eagles. In 1968, I'm sure you've heard of the movie Stay Away, Joe. Right, Melissa? He said sarcastically.
Yeah, that's a hard no.
You know why? Because it was Elvis's 26th movie. And in this one, he plays an indigenous American rodeo champion.
Oh, boy.
Yikes.
That probably doesn't hold up.
No, this day in 1968 will not be remembered for that. On this day in 1969, the astronauts on board Apollo 9 sang to celebrate the birthday of director of NASA Space Operations Christopher Kraft, making Happy Birthday the very first song performed in outer space. And I'll tell you, Melissa, I spent way too much time on YouTube last night trying to find, I mean, they've got tapes of all the missions. I could not find any tape or audio from when they did that singing. So I guess they weren't rolling tape at the time.
That's silly.
I know. Can tell you a lot else about Apollo 9, but not the damn song. All right. This was the number one hit this day in 1975. Also on this day, in 1994, two successful 90s albums were released on the same day. Super Unknown by Soundgarden and The Downward Spiral by Nine Inch Nails, debuting at number one and number two on the album chart, respectively. So I got to turn things over to my 90s music correspondents, Melissa Kay and Aaron Zommers. Can you tell me anything about these two albums? Yeah, I can't stall you, Aaron.
I mean, nah, I don't have a lot to say except that they're both fantastic. Let's see. I'm just double checking.
He's trying to compete with Olivia Newton-John over here.
I'm double checking which songs are on. Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's what I thought. Super Unknown has Black Hole Sun, which is probably their most famous song from Soundgarden. And The Downward Spiral has the most famous song by Nine Inch Nails, Closer, alongside a bunch of other hits. So they're both great albums.
Yeah. All right. So we'll play those excerpts as those songs top the charts. So now again, in a switch of musical stylings, going from Have You Never Been Mellow to Into Club by 50 Cent this day in 2003. Go, 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 shawty. It's your birthday. We gonna party like it's your birthday. We gonna it would hold the number one spot for 9 weeks.
Wow.
And then one other note here. In 2014, in one of aviation's greatest mysteries, can you believe 2014? It's been 9 years already since Malaysia Flight 370 just disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Kinda.
I mean, my good. There were 239 people on board. It was going from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. And the fate of the flight remains unknown. Some wreckage was found a long time later, but very far away. Nobody knows anything about what happened. It's just one of those great mysteries of our time. And I shouldn't say great. It's a terrible mystery that
tragedy.
You can't figure it out.
Mm. Wow.
I had mentioned earlier that Aaron Rodgers, on this day 1 year ago, agreed to a 4-year contract extension with the Packers. That doesn't seem to have worked out very well.
I was going to say, isn't he talking to the Jets?
Yes. So let's see what else. On this day in 2021, the presidential election of 2020 ended quietly when the Supreme Court issued a notice rejecting Donald Trump's final lawsuit alleging a problem with balloting in Wisconsin. And on this day in 2020, Christian Yelich signed a 9-year extension with the Brewers. I've given you all of 10 seconds here, Melissa, to tell me what's happening. You're going on the road. You're doing a remote show.
Yeah, Seth and Don. Seth is going to go on a live remote. Sorry.
That's okay.
The Hmong American Center at the Community Health Fair Thursday on our WIRI station from 4 to 6 p.m.
All right.
So that should be great.
Thanks, Melissa. Feel better soon. We'll talk to you again later.
Thanks, Pat. Bye,
Aaron. You're up north.